Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 4th, 2018. Panicked, gripped internally displaced persons in Juba after heavy gunfire erupted near their camp this evening.
It happened near the POC-1, between the POC-1 and POC-3, where I am. And we don't know up to now what happened exactly, what caused the firing or the fighting, and who fights who.
And South Sudan's military spokesman accuses rebels of attacking government positions in Nyeri River State.
On the 3rd of this month, the rebels attacked three defensive positions for the SPLA. At 5, the first place to be attacked was Mrobo at 5:30. We engaged the rebels for about 30 minutes, after which they were repulsed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Panicked, gripped, internally displaced persons sheltering at UN's protection of civilian sites in Juba this evening following a heavy gunfire near their camp. James Yel Yok Nyal lives at one of the various UN camps in Juba. He tells Ayen Bior that residents of the various camps took cover during a brief but heavy gunfire which lasted for about 3 minutes. Yel says the identity of the gunmen were not known, adding that the armed men came from the direction of Juba town and were using a military vehicle.
We don't know the real cause of the gunfire. Just 2 hours ago, it happened near the POC-1, between the POC-1 and POC-3, where I am. And we don't know up to now what happened exactly, what caused the firing or the fighting, and who fights who. We don't know up to now, but according to sources and confirmed sources, that tool and cruisers came from the town, and they with some gunmen, and they land in between the two camps, and then they fire. I don't know whether they fired at the boys who were fleeing, or they were firing to the checkpoint where the police and other army forces were stationed there.
James, do you know if anyone was hurt?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear about that.
Have you spoken to anyone who saw the actual gunfire?
Well, we tried to inquire from those of the POC-1, which is nearest to the incident place, but they didn't know because they were inside the camp like us here. And those who were coming from the town do not know. They did not know what happened exactly, but they heard the gunfire.
Were the gunshots audible from where you're at in POC-3?
Yes. The gunshots were between the POC-3 and POC-1. Nearer to POC-3, where there is a place there where our kids used to play football. They're outside the camp.
When did these gunshots go off? At what time did the gunfire happen?
I think that just half an hour ago, which is I'm not sure exactly because I didn't see the watch, but it is around 5 o'clock, between 5 and 6 o'clock.
Could you describe the mood? What was going on where you were at when these gunshots were going off?
Well, there was panic in the camp here, because they didn't know, and the shots were very near to us, and everybody was scared, and all the kids and the ladies, they and everybody, almost everybody was running about in the POC-1 and POC-3.
And describe the mood right now. What is going on at the POC camp where you are at right now?
Well, the mood is normal because nobody is hurt, and these people, it was just a fight of some minutes, I think about 2 to 3, 4 minutes. So those people ran towards the town. Those who came from the town, they went back to the town that way. We don't know whether they are military men or police or any other armed groups.
That's James Yel Yok Nyal, a resident of the UN's Protection of Civilian Sites in Juba. He was speaking to Ayen Bior this past hour from Juba. More than 6 people were killed during fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to Riek Machar at Morobo in Yei River State on Wednesday. South Sudan military spokesman says the rebels have recorded, says the government has recorded violations of cessation of hostility agreement by rebels since the deal was signed by stakeholders in Addis Ababa last month. The deputy military spokesman of the rebels of the SPLM-IO told this program that his troops were attacked by government soldiers in many locations across South Sudan. Earlier this week, the Troika countries of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway issued a strong warning to the commanders of the warring parties to respect the latest cessation of hostility deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Clashes erupted in parts of Yei River Estate between the South Sudan Army and rebels loyal to the former first vice president Riek Machar 2 days after the Troika countries issued its warning to the warring parties. Both the South Sudan Army and the SPLA-IO rebels accused each other of violating the latest ceasefire, just as they did again and again after deadly clashes broke out days within the signing of the first cessation of hostilities agreement in 2015. The spokesperson of the South Sudan Army Brigadier General Lul Roy claims government troops were attacked by SPLM-IO rebels in Morobo, Basi, and Nyondo yesterday.
On the 3rd of this month, that was yesterday, the rebels attacked 3 defensive positions for the SPLA. At 5, the first place to be attacked was Morobo at 5:30. We engaged the rebels for about 30 minutes, after which they were repulsed. 3 rebel fighters were killed. At around 6, there was an attack at our defensive positions in Nyundu, about 5 to 4 kilometers north of Kaya. They were also repulsed. 2 rebel fighters were killed. There was the 3rd attack at Bazi, but the fires they delivered were not effective because they were firing from a nearby mountain top, and therefore there was no casualties.
Lul claims the SPLA-IO killed 15 civilians since renewed clashes erupted last month.
We had 6 attacks on SPLA's defensive positions in 2 states, namely Yei River and Northern Leech. The places that were attacked in Yei are Nyundu, Bazi, and Morobo. In Northern Leech, Wad Nyone, Thomangur and Koch were attacked. We heard 2 road ambushes, one at Napotpot and the other one at Ngauru. In total, 15 rebel fighters were killed, 15 civilians, 11 in Northern Leech and 4 in Kapoita. 5 civilians were wounded in separate ambushes in Kapoita. The money stolen, $10,000 from the Indian businessman and other properties valued at 10 million South Sudanese pounds in Kapoita.
Roy says 6 wounded rebel fighters were captured in Northern Leech by government forces and are being treated at Bentiu Military Hospital. The cessation of hostilities agreement signed last month by various South Sudanese stakeholders requires the warring parties to release all political detainees and prisoners of war by January 7th. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lam Gabriel claims government soldiers attacked their position in Yei River and Northern Leech states last month.
They sent 8 Land Cruiser pickups full of soldiers. They came from Yei, arrived in Kaya. So yesterday at around 7, they started implementing the order from the governor by attacking our positions and hitting us in Dudulabe and Lojulo and other places almost close to Yondu. So we fought back. Right now, they are stationed in Poki, awaiting further attacks, I think, on our territory.
Gabriel says his fighters killed more than 7 SPLA soldiers during recent clashes in Yei River State.
We sustained 3 injuries, and we lost 2 people because they were taken by surprise. And also the government continued selling from Kaya, selling our bases. So we pulled them back up to Kimba.
Roy says the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism, or CITISM, monitors should travel to Yei River State to verify the reported ceasefire violations.
To stop this culture of blaming all the parties to the conflict, blaming the victim together with the aggressor, we had been a victim of collective blemish. Each time the rebels are on the offensive, we would come out and inform the international community that we are being attacked. But whenever they release a statement, they would blame all of us. To us, it has not been fair. They should be courageous enough to say who is violating what and where. And in this case, they should be courageous enough to blame the rebels for the latest upsurge in fighting. We don't shy away from responsibility. We should also be condemned when we are responsible for violations. But in all the situations we have just mentioned, the escalation in fighting we witnessed before Christmas and the one after Christmas were solely carried out by the rebels, either loyal to Riek Machar or to Thomas Cirilo.
Roy accuses rebels loyal to Machar and General Thomas Cirilo of the National Salvation Front of attacking several government positions in Yei River State. Both Roy and Gabriel claim they are committed to respecting the ceasefire deal and say their commanders have been instructed to stop fighting and allow free movement of civilians and humanitarian aid. Just this past hour, there are credible reports of heavy gunfire in Juba near the office of the United Nations mission in South Sudan in the Jebel suburb. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
An Ethiopian opposition leader says Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn needs to do more to bring about national reconciliation in the country. Yesterday, the Prime Minister announced the release of political prisoners. Several opposition members were arrested on charges of terrorism and secession from the Oromia province. Professor Binir Petros, vice chairman of the Ethiopian Federal Democratic Forum, tells VOA's James Batty that the opposition has always maintained that the arrests were politically motivated.
First reaction would be, I hope this is addressing our continued demand for the release of all political prisoners. However, a statement made by the Prime Minister and his colleagues that are leaders of the four component parties of the ruling coalition made it so vague in a way that this is going to be a procedure by clearing each individual prisoner on the basis of the constitutional and legal proceedings pertaining to each individual. So we really don't know what this means and how fast they would be acting on this and which political prisoners would be, you know, benefiting from this statement. And we are yet to see how far they would go to make good on their statement.
The Prime Minister said that this announcement is intended to bring about reconciliation. First of all, do you in the opposition believe that your friends should have been arrested in the first place?
No, we have been holding all along. All these imprisonments are politically motivated and they are illegal. And hence, they have not been able to present cases against them, and they are simply, you know, wasting time by continuously giving appointments in the courts after every month or so. And I don't think releasing political prisoners is the only issue that would bring about reconciliation in this country. There are several other serious factors that need to be addressed.
Okay, if it's not releasing, what do you think can bring about genuine reconciliation?
Basically, addressing the fundamental question of democratization in this country, which they have blocked all along and have been ruling this country single-handedly, 100% ruling party parliament. This country does not, you know, indicate that there is a democracy in this country. There are also other issues like Over the years, there have been so many abuses in the population. People have been killed with impunity, and no serious charges have been issued over any of these perpetrators. And there is a question of corruption, question of bad governance, and the lack of rule of law and abuse of human rights. All of these can be issues that need to be addressed before reconciliation can be thought of in this country.
As you said, these opposition leaders have been in jail since last year. What do you think the Prime Minister decided to make this announcement?
It's the pressure put on them by the population, by the Ethiopians, all over the country. There have been, you know, demonstrations calling for the resignation of this government and, you know, calling for free, fair, and genuine elections to determine who should be leading this country.
That's Professor Bieni Petros, Vice Chairman of the Ethiopian Federal Democratic Forum. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier yesterday. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese immigrants in Israel are being told to leave the country by the end of March or risk being sent to jail. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes a relationship strong?
The only thing is trusting one another. When you trust someone, you will not think negative of your partner.
Communication. The moment you communicate, everything is going to be sorted. Because most marriages always break out because of little communication among the spouses.
Trust and faith. When, for example, if I'm in a relationship, I would suggest, it's important for your partner to trust you and have faith in you.
Relationship can be strong when you understand yourself, you have unity and you work together, and you also have common activities you do together so that you can share the relationship. The relationship will be stronger.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese immigrants in Israel say they are worried about a decision by the Israeli government to deport illegal immigrants from Israel by the end of March. Motassim Ali is one of the few legal migrants from Sudan who has been granted a refugee status in Israel. He says many illegal immigrants from Sudan fear being deported back home and are appealing to Israeli authorities to grant asylum to Sudanese who entered Israel illegally.
In 2009, really beginning of 2009, and we had to cross the border illegally, making it to Israel, seeking for safety and a place where we can call it a temporary home.
Tell us a little bit about the latest development in Israel. We understand the government is once again threatening to deport immigrants who are in Israel, and the majority of these immigrants are people from Eritrea and Sudan. What do you know about that?
Right. So first of all, most of the refugees and asylum seekers from Sudan and Eritrea, and almost the vast majority are fleeing one kind of fear to their lives and liberty, whether in Sudan or Eritrea. And so the recent policy is meant to drive as many people as possible to leave Israel to a third country named Rwanda and Uganda. We don't know the terms of the deal, but what we know is that Rwanda is receiving $5,000 per one person, and the person who's agreeing to leave will receive $3,500. Why Israel is treating refugees and asylum seekers this way? No legitimate justification for that, because Israel labels refugees and asylum seekers as illegal work infiltrators, while the asylum applications have never been processed. And to be honest, until today, there were only 10 people being recognized as refugees from Sudan and Eritrea. I'm the one, and there is another Sudanese, I don't know who is, and then 8 other Eritreans.
How many Sudanese are there in Israel who are asylum seekers?
According to the government's figures, there are about 7,500 Sudanese. I don't believe that that's the accurate number, though. I believe the number of Sudanese are fewer than that. But this is the official number from the government, 7,500 people. And you look at this number, we're not speaking of 70,000, we're not speaking of 75,000 people. And Israel is a country with a good GDP and the country that even doesn't have so many refugees and sending people by force to countries that are already taking millions of refugees.
You told me that your asylum application was granted by the Israeli government, so you're a refugee in Israel, but there are other people who are not refugees. And how are these people? Where are they right now as we speak?
People living in different areas, in different cities in Israel, but the vast majority of Sudanese in particular were sent to a detention facility called the Hola detention facility in the Negev of Gaza, south of Israel. And most of them spent a couple of months in that detention facility. The idea was to make their life as difficult as possible so that they can choose voluntarily to leave the third country. The community from Sudan and Eritrea are around different cities in Israel, and they're really having difficult times these days. The uncertainty, the lack of faith, and the fear of deportation to places where they don't know what will happen next.
You speak to a lot of your colleagues from Sudan and from Eritrea or from the African countries. What is their biggest fear?
The biggest fear among the community right now, I'm speaking of Sudanese and their friends, is that the people are so concerned that they will be deposited to countries they do not know the terms of the agreements. Like, you are being deported to somewhere, but you never know what will happen next.
How are the other ordinary Israelis interacting with you? How do they treat you?
The vast majority of Israelis are not supportive to refugees and asylum seekers. Most of them, not because they're bad, but I think the government's policy and the incitement, like the systematic incitement by the government, such as like the way Netanyahu speaks, even today in his opening remarks in his meeting, today, that infiltrators should be deported out of this country. They have no place here, and they've got two options: either to live by, either cooperate with the authorities and live by themselves, or we will force them to leave. So most of the Israeli public are now anti-refugees and asylum seekers. There are a very small minority of Israelis who are very much supportive of those, and that would sustain us and keep us strong. But again, that's not really enough to support refugees and asylum seekers. Anyway.
That's Mutasim Ali, a South Sudanese refugee living in Israel. He was speaking to me from Tel Aviv on Wednesday. A non-governmental organization is helping South Sudanese refugees in Uganda to become more self-reliant by teaching them how to start small-scale businesses. But some refugees at the Agojo resettlement in Uganda's Adjumani district complain the initiative is failing to achieve its intended goal, putting cash into their hands. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
The Lutheran World Federation, or LWF, launched a project last year that gives goats to vulnerable refugees to provide milk and sustenance. They can later sell the goats and use the proceeds to pay for basic necessities. The beneficiaries of the project include widows, large families, and refugees with disabilities. But several months after receiving the goats, some refugees say the program has yet to bear fruits. Jamila Zwa, a single mother of six at the Agojo settlement, received a goat about 6 months ago, but says so far the project has not helped her.
I have not benefited from that goat. It hasn't even produced yet. It can't help me. You know, it was still very young when I got it. This is not the sort of assistance that can help me immediately. It is a long-term project.
Margaret Inya, another widow and mother of five children, bought 10 chicks she expected to mature and provide food for her family. But Inya says that didn't happen.
I was given 10 chicks. They told us to raise the chicks, and when they are big enough, We can balance our diet by occasionally eating chickens. We could also sell some to get money for other needs. Unfortunately, all the chicks died.
Inya says she was counting on the chickens to empower her financially to take care of her children and the two orphans under her care. Others, including Samuel Era, a South Sudanese refugee in his late 50s, were more successful. Like Inya, Era used his cash assistance to buy 10 chicks, but unlike Inya, Era says his investment paid off.
Out of the 10 chickens, I've so far sold 3 with 90,000. Out of 90,000, I bought 1 goat.
Era says he expects the goat to start producing in the coming year. He says the chickens lay on average 4 eggs a day. When he gathers a dozen eggs, he sells them for 4,000 Ugandan shillings, which is just under a dollar.
Now the chicken is giving me some eggs. Sometimes I'm selling, sometimes I'm eating to change the diet. This is a benefit I got out of these chickens given.
Era says perhaps the reason he succeeded where others failed was because of his long experience with raising livestock before he was forced to flee South Sudan because of the ongoing conflict. LWF's program coordinator for Uganda, Paul Orikushaba, agrees such experience is always useful. He says his organization is not responsible for the failure of the refugees' projects.
So we target people who have interest in livestock. The criteria is communities we select. We go and discuss with communities. We indicate to them that this particular intervention requires the following capacities and competencies. Please help in selection of the required people with the required competencies.
Orikushaba says despite the collapse of small business ventures by certain refugees, the LWF's initiative has been a success with many other refugees who want to become more self-reliant.
Communities that have been targeted are able to tell the difference between how they were before we intervened and how they are right now. People are able to buy items they did not have before. They are able to diversify their diet. They are able to take care of their children better, to feed them better, but also to take them to hospital and so on and so forth.
The Lutheran World Federation official says one of the biggest impacts of his organization's livelihood projects is enabling refugees to build their capacity in agriculture, livestock farming, and small business ventures so they can try to rebuild their lives in Uganda until they can safely return home. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
And that report by Apiku in Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Morina Opidri by Lansan Lee.
Lansan Lee, hey. Lansan Lee, the new generation man. Opi Ekwenidi. Karudu Waiyai. Opi Ekwemanini. Studios.
Morina Opidri Mesuarayo.
Yeni Mari Komane.
Morina Opidri Mesuarayo.
Ahi Mari Komane.
Morina Opidri Muturukwa.
Yeni Mari Komane.
Atani Vono Matila Kwani Rasa.
Opi Mari Komwera.
Ongo Nyondi Matini Polisia.
Opi Mari Oriote.
Ajo Mari Ni Opiru Waria.
Opi Mari Ekwe. Son in Utea, Enga Muzo Peleo, Tamongo Lady Utia, Tamuyo Lady Utia, Lini Mukwe Lady Utia, Tamongo Lady Utia, Opi Madio Le Mandre Utia, Opi Madio Le Mandre, Yesu Madio Le Mandre Utia, Yesu Madio Le Mandre.
We've been listening to Lansan Lee with the song Opi Na Mori Opina. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Marikoba.